Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Matthew Wells at the United Nations in New York. In this week's programme, how the UN is boosting representation and the rights of women in Montenegro, and Pacific countries focus on bringing more women into politics. But first, most of the Syrians who are fleeing their war-torn country are doing so out of fear of sexual violence. That's according to a senior UN humanitarian coordinator in the region. The brutal civil war in Syria has driven more than 4 million people to seek refuge in other countries. Sexual violence has affected men as well as women and children. Dr. Shibli Sabani is the humanitarian coordinator of the UN Population Fund for Jordan and southern Syria. May Yacoub asked him to outline the forms of abuse that Syrians have been suffering.
In the Syria crisis context, all the studies and surveys have shown that domestic violence and early marriage or forced marriage is the main issue when it comes to gender-based violence. But we also learned from our surveys and studies that the fear from sexual violence was the main cause of leaving Syria as IDPs or as refugees.
What is the impact of sexual violence, particularly rape, on the victim?
The first one is the physical consequences, which is mainly the pregnancy due to the sexual violence, the STIs, HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, but it can be also from wounds or it can be a death due to the violence. The second category is the mental disorders, and it can be also depression, and it can lead to suicide. The third category is the social impact or social consequences, and this can be a stigma from the community or from the family, and it can lead to honor crimes.
Honor crimes are very, unfortunately, spread in Jordan. What do you do in this case with the authority, with the Jordanian authority, to limit or prevent the happening of such crimes?
Fortunately, I mean, the local authorities, they are aware of this issue, and as UNFPA and with the other UN agencies and international NGOs, we are doing some advocacy on this. Mm-hmm. But we work very closely with the Family Protection Department and with other stakeholders to address this issue. Now, the issue is not only about, I mean, preventing at the field level, but also to work at policymaking level and to involve all the stakeholders.
Boosting the representation of women running for local office is just one of the ways in which the UN is bolstering rights and development in Montenegro. That's according to the UN's resident coordinator for Montenegro, Fiona McClooney, who's been in post in the small Balkan country that became independent 9 years ago since the summer. I asked Ms. McClooney to describe how the UN was working with the government of Montenegro.
It's not a permanent partner. It's an organisation that will provide support as and when required and probably work in itself out of a role over time. And particularly as the government sees itself joining the EU in the short run, I think our key activities will be in the short run, and over time we will evolve into another supporting role.
Is your role essentially an economic one, a development role?
As UN agencies in Montenegro, we're there to support the government in their development objectives. And one of the key priorities for government is EU accession. So we actually support the government in a number of the obligations and its objectives in meeting the EU accession requirements. It has everything from economic development through to issues around social inclusion, issues to do with environmental sustainability. And then there's a key area around democratic governance and strengthening institutions for their future purpose.
So you help the government and the people, in a sense, integrate better with the existing wider European framework?
Yes, absolutely. The government's very keen to take on board some of the obligations that it would require to join the EU, obligations in relation to the economics and trade, but also obligations that relate to environment and also the way it treats its people, human rights, civil rights, the role of NGOs and civil society in how it operates. And we, as the UN, support those objectives and help the government introduce the reforms necessary to achieve them.
What challenges do you face when it comes to equality issues? I'm thinking here particularly of women.
There are lots of issues around gender equality, and we as the UN have been working with government on those things. We worked quite extensively on women's participation in government, in political parties and also in parliament. We've been helping them significantly to increase the number of women participants in local and national governments. And the number of women in local governments actually raised from 5% to 25% as a result of our support. And we'll see another huge step in those numbers in the new elections that will come about next year. There's also other roles in relation to women, particularly in improving the number of women entrepreneurs and women's participation in business. And then finally, in relation to family violence and victims of violence, there's quite an important role in supporting the government in helplines and integrated service provision for families and women that suffer from violence.
Countries in the Pacific are also exploring ways of getting more women into legislative positions with the support of the UN. Just 5% of parliamentarians in the region are women. They face a number of barriers in getting into politics. Daniel Dickinson has been speaking to Roy Trivedi, the United Nations Development Programme resident representative in Papua New Guinea, which recently hosted a regional conference on strengthening women's participation in politics.
The Pacific has, on average, just 5% of MPs, members of parliament, who are women. This is something which has been recognised by Pacific leaders since 2012, when the leaders passed a declaration to try and encourage more women into politics and parliament through what are called temporary special measures, which are a range of affirmative actions to try and get more women candidates elected by political parties with the confidence of their electorates to vote for women, and then women who can actually then really represent their constituencies well in parliament. Countries have made some progress, but actually it's recognised now that there is insufficient progress.
What's the benefit of having more women in legislative positions?
The more that parliaments represent all of the electorates that they are serving, the more legitimacy that parliament as an institution has. The more that we have candidates from different regions, women as well as men, people of different ages, people from different ethnic backgrounds and so on, enables more citizens to engage with political processes, to challenge those processes where needed. But the key is that all of this better representation leads to better policies and better outcomes in the longer term.
Do women in the Pacific want to get into politics, or is this just a Western view of what should happen in a democracy?
More and more women do want to get involved in politics because they know that politicians and political processes shape people's lives. But there are a range of different barriers which are stopping women.
So what barriers do women face?
There are a range of institutional barriers. For example, a lot of political parties up until the last few years have not supported women candidates because there is almost this sort of deeply held belief among some men that electorates will not vote for women. That, of course, needs to be tested. Women also need to have the confidence to stand for political processes. We also have a situation across much of the Pacific that at the time of elections, the thing that really swings voters is the fact that often large amounts of money and assets are paid over to people who will vote for particular candidates. And a lot of women, A, do not have that kind of capital and disposable income to be able to throw at this. And many also, quite rightly, are refusing to do that. They do not want to be part of a process which involves, you know, money and buying of votes, etc. So all these things actually stop women from getting involved in political processes. And there are also lots of institutional barriers, particularly on the part of political parties and key institutions, in promoting women into these leadership processes, providing support, mentorship, and other ways of actually encouraging and nurturing talent from women in much of the Pacific.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'm Matthew Wells.